Mixtape Podcast.
Yeah, what it do? Mobbing with the crew, nothing new. I thought you knew, thought I was falling off. Blessings keep on falling through. Oh, don't panic, dog. Grow a boo, I can't lose. No, I can't lose.
Yo. Yo. What's good, y'all? I am Josh So Focused.
I'm French the Bro Host, and we would like to welcome you to
the Knicks Take Podcast.
This is episode 88.
And this is a weekly podcast where we bring you the biggest Knicks news of the week.
Make sure to follow us on our socials. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter/X by searching for the Knicks Take.
Also, make sure you check us out at the website, KnicksTake.com.
And lastly, if you love what you hear, please subscribe to us on whatever platform you're watching or listening to us on. Hit the thumbs up button and the notification bell if you're watching on YouTube. But most importantly, share this with any fellow Knicks fans who might enjoy the show.
And now, the show.
I don't like how I ended that just now. I ain't have no energy. Normally, you got to just get it all out in one burst. I was stumbling through it, but it's all right, though. It's the playoffs. We're going to save the energy for where it really matters.
Sure, if you say so.
Let's talk about the what this episode is going to pertain to.
Well, how are you, first of all?
I'm cool. Nothing too crazy. I ain't do nothing. I went to work all week, watched the Knicks, pretty entertaining Knicks week. How's your week?
Very, very, very good. The New York Rangers haven't lost a playoff game. They're also in the playoffs. Mm. And I haven't been watching any games because I'm so focused on the NBA season. But I'm a Rangers fan also. And for those keeping track at home, I'm a Knicks, Yankees,
Giants,
and Rangers fan. So,
I don't watch any sport outside of basketball. I think I would watch the Rangers though, but I don't want to jump on a bandwagon now that they undefeated in the postseason. Like, it'll look kind of weird.
Yeah, and they were number one in NHL this whole season, so it's looking good. If you're a Rangers fan, we might be seeing some rings in the Garden. Hopefully, multiple rings if the New York Knicks can figure it out.
Hopefully.
And back to the New York Knicks, we are in round two. Eastern Conference semifinals, Knicks versus the Indiana Pacers, a series with lots of historical implications, a lot of history between these two teams, a lot of it with the New York Knicks winning. But let's not discount that the last couple of times Pacers were the ones to eliminate the New York Knicks. New York Knicks hoping to change that recency and come out of this playoff series much like they did throughout the 90s with a victory over the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, and speaking of the 90s, a little foreshadow. I didn't even realize that Reggie Miller shot, they won that game but lost the series after that. I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was, as our mother. Happy Mother's Day to everyone. By the time you guys listen to this, it will either be Mother's Day or Mother's Day will just have passed. Mm-hmm. Our mother is in the building. And I recall watching that game.
Damn, hitting the mic all crazy. Yeah, my fault. Pause.
Yeah. watching that game at home with my parents and being utterly devastated, remembering how terrible that was and not remembering that the Knicks actually ended up winning that series. But then again, I wasn't really a true Knicks fan at the time. So, but that series specifically had a lot of memories when you look back on it.
That still impact the Knicks to this day.
So, we're going to go over game one in the Garden, game two in the Garden, and game three that just happened last night as of this recording against the Indiana Pacers in Indiana. We're going to go into some of the storylines that came out of those games, and we're going to go into what we should expect in the upcoming games. Starting off with game one in Madison Square Garden on May 6th, 2024. That was Monday. I miswrote that. I'm going to breeze through this really quickly. Mainly because a lot of it is old hat. A lot of it is stuff that's been debated and is really exhausting as far as the implications of that game and just how close it was.
Mm-hmm. Most important game so far, apparently.
According to who you talk to. But anyway, Knicks started off strong, started being the Pacers in transition and on the fast break. Mm-hmm. Knicks were playing good defense, playing good offense to start the game. Really looked like a lot of people were like, oh, the Knicks don't want to run back and forth with the Pacers. They want to slow it down and they want to do half court and muck it up. And, you know, I saw a lot of conflicting report, opinions on this, in that the Pacers are actually a really good half court offense as well as a really good fast break offense as mm-hmm. well. One of the best offenses in the league, second only to the Boston Celtics. And Knicks, as I came into this series knowing, Knicks are not scared to run. Knicks are not scared to go back and forth to pick up the pace. They can do that efficiently just as well as they can efficiently score in the half court. This, you know, playing that kind of style does not really hamper the Knicks, specifically when they're healthy, which we'll get into that a little bit later. Second quarter starts, and the Pacers started to take control of the game behind T.J. McConnell and Obi Toppin. Strong play. We will be hearing their names a lot probably in this episode. Knicks go from being up 8 to down 9 until right before halftime. Isaiah Hartenstein throws up a prayer from the other end of the court, and it goes in, splash, right as the buzzer goes off to go from the Knicks being down 9 to down 6. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the momentum shift. They needed some sort of adrenaline going into halftime. They needed to be not closer to 5 than to 10. And the Knicks really did do that after that play. Knicks opened up the third quarter, blitzing the Pacers, who did score an opening six, but the Knicks just really started rattling off points behind Isaiah Hartenstein, behind Jalen Brunson, behind Dante DiVincenzo. And they end up taking an advantage in the third quarter until T.J. McConnell and Obi Toppin, I feel like I just said those two names, can subbed in and regained the advantage for the Indiana Pacers. Mm-hmm. Before I move on, French, how do you feel about Obi Toppin?
I knew he was going to be the main spark plug off the bench just due to the fact that he was crying on draft day saying that he was going to make us not regret that pick, right, just for us to end up regretting that pick and then trading him to the team that we're going to face in the second round. And now he want to do all the things that he wasn't doing for us. Not to say that he wasn't productive for us. He was like a reliable transition threat and occasional corner shooter in some games, but well, he seems a lot more comfortable playing for Indiana off the bench than he did for us.
Tom Thibodeau really stressed him being a better corner three-point shooter, and it seems that that has paid dividends for not the New York Knicks, but the Indiana Pacers, as Obi Toppin has made that a part of his game, along with all of the strengths that he came into the league for, mm-hmm. which is moving around the court, being a cutter, being a good passer. All of these things that really go within the Indiana Pacers offensive guidelines, and just the corner, the ability to shoot comfortably from the corner, shoot comfortably from three, really is making a lot of teams, including the New York Knicks, pull their hairs out. Fourth quarter.
I was going to say one more thing. Toppin was also rebounding like crazy in this game one, too. That's something that he never did for us.
100%. Every time I see Obi Toppin sky for an offensive rebound, which he has done several times, I'm not mad because that wasn't his role on this team. But it's just, you hate to see him do it against us, one of the best rebounding teams in the league, both offensively and defensively. We gave this guy up for second round picks, and he's coming back to be a better player than he was when he was on this team consistently. Not that he was never good on the New York Knicks, but he never was able to string it along together, you know, well enough for us to be like, oh yeah, he's a building block for this team.
And I don't want to hear like, oh, he never got the minutes under Tibbs, because he got the minutes. He's playing the same amount of minutes now. He only played 19 minutes this game, but in those minutes, he was extremely productive. He was rebounding, like I just said. He only missed two shots. He made two threes. He was one of the leading scorers off their bench. And even in the previous series, he had a game where he dropped like 20-something on Milwaukee to help them close out that series. So, yeah, it was a little disheartening seeing him basically provide what we needed for him to provide for us, especially now that we don't have Julius Randle.
If he was offensive rebounding like that for us, Tibbs would have found minutes for him at the five or something. Like, Tibbs likes two things: your ability to protect the rim and your ability to rebound. That's why guys like Josh Hart, who ended up with 48 minutes in this game. That's why he plays 48 minutes in a 48-minute regulation basketball game. Yeah. And no one else does, because of his ability to rebound above his size. If Obi Toppin can do that, he didn't have any offensive rebounds in this game, but he did have six defensive rebounds.
Which is the most on the team?
Yes.
Tied for the most on the team?
No, for this game, he actually had the most in the Indiana Pacers as far as...
No, I'm sorry.
You're right. Three-way tie between Aaron Naismith, Pascal Siakam, and Obi Toppin. But anyway,
and
he's rebounding, and that's what that.
When we picked up Dante DiVincenzo, just to drive the point home just a little bit more, remember we were saying
he's going to be a better rebounder.
Exactly, he's going to be a better rebounder.
I think you specifically made that comment.
Better shooter, and he's going to be able to provide more of a spark off the bench just for him to end up being our starting two guard, but.
I'm going to say this and move off it, but Dante DiVincenzo has been better for us and is a better fit for us than Obi Toppin was. I just wish we got more than 2 second-round picks. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, but we don't know what they'll turn into, so that could turn into a superstar player in a trade package, so we'll see. To be determined.
Right. Fourth quarter. Fourth quarter, we're just going to get right into it. It's tight. It's close, right? JB, the boy, the Brunson burner, crazy shot making in that fourth quarter. No Obi Toppin or TJ McConnell for a large stretch of time during the fourth quarter, which a lot of people were pointing out after the game.
Why do you think that is?
Well, the theory that I've heard was that if you put TJ McConnell in the game, you're making him a spot up shooter, and TJ McConnell would rather have the ball. You can't put it, unless you're taking Tyrese Halliburton off the court, which they're not going to do. It really doesn't make their offense better to have them both on the floor.
Yeah. Because it's taking away the effectiveness of one player entirely, basically, offensively. Right.
But some people would say maybe Tyrese shouldn't have finished this game because he only finished with 6 field goal attempts.
And 6 points.
Right.
But he had 9 assists. He was setting up his teammates.
Yep.
But he just wasn't providing that star impact that he's supposed to be providing.
In the closing minutes of this game, a really important stretch happened. It was tied at 115. There was a kickball called where Jalen Brunson was trying to dribble the ball. Neesmith.
He tried to pass it to Dante.
Yes. Neesmith gets his hand on the ball. It was kind of an awkward, like from the way the camera was angled, you couldn't tell exactly what happened. It looked like it was a kickball just by how he was moving. They showed a different angle and it was all ball. It was all hand. No feet. Should not have been called a kickball. The Pacers should have gotten the ball and had a fast break opportunity on the other end. And immediately following that kickball, Dante DiVincenzo drains a clutch three to put the Knicks up.
They tried to double team Brunson.
Right. 118-115. Now, with that said, there's still a bunch of time left in the game. Like, it's not over just because the Knicks go up three. As we've seen in the first round series between in multiple games between the Philadelphia 76ers and the New York Knicks, that there that Dante DiVincenzo three occurred with boom, 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 40 seconds left.
This ain't Philly, though.
Yes, but the point being that the Pacers are a better offensive team than Philly. Means that 40 seconds is a lot of time for you to turn that around. Yeah, it was a missed call. It was a missed called violation. Should have been the Pacers ball. Knicks go up three. 40 seconds left in the game. A lot of time. Pacers call timeout. Then you get a Siakam finger roll layup. Knicks call timeout. It's 118-117. And Brunson gets trapped on the baseline. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what to do. He has no one to pass it to. Pacers play very good defense. He tries to pass the ball, can't, and then he ends up throwing it off of Nesmith, was it that time? Ends up throwing it off a Pacer. The ball bounces off of him and then bounces off of Jalen Brunson to go out of bounds.
Well, he's standing out of bounds already.
And I immediately was like, Brunson, why are you chucking it at his chest? You got to throw it at his legs, if anything. Maybe he jumps over it, and then it goes to the side of the court that you want the ball to go on. Instead, what happens is you get the turnover with no time eclipsing off of the clock.
It didn't seem like he needed to jump in the air either, like... It seemed like when he was going up, he had space to just turn around.
He looked like he
was expecting a foul.
No, he looked like he was losing balance, but I didn't see why he couldn't lose his balance in the direction of, going into the court as opposed to off the court.
And even losing his balance, he could have just tossed it at the leg like you just said. He didn't even need to jump.
But again, 118-117. Like I said, there's a lot of time left. Knicks are only up one at this point. Pacers bring the ball up. Miles Turner makes a screen on Dante DiVincenzo. Dante DiVincenzo accentuates the contact. refs call it an offensive foul. Mm-hmm. It was an offensive foul. It was a moving screen on Miles Turner, even though a lot of people are saying, you can't make that call. No, you can. You can. You can make that call. And there was 13 seconds left in the game at that point. Again, 1 point game. A lot of time left still. 1 point game, 13 seconds, a lot of time. You get a foul, you get the ball back, you shoot a three, it's overtime. What happens? Foul. But it doesn't happen when the Knicks throw the ball onto the court. Foul happens right before that.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Knicks get a free throw. Brunson goes to the line, drains it. Now the Pacers, who were going to intentionally foul anyway, they have to intentionally foul again. Brunson goes back to the line, knocks down both his free throws. Now the Knicks are up four when they could have only been up three. But because of the Pacers' poor execution, the Knicks go up 4 points with 11 seconds left in the game. Halliburton commits a turnover instead of getting off a good shot to end the game with 4 seconds left. Knicks win 121-117. A historic night. I said Jalen Brunson was going off, but I didn't do it any service. Historic night for JB. He becomes the first NBA player to go for 40-plus points, 5-plus assists for four straight playoff games. First player since Michael Jordan to score 40-plus points for four straight games in the NBA playoffs.
It would have been five. He only had 39 in the game before that one.
After. Oh, before too.
Yeah.
Great game from JB. Great job from the entire team. Josh Hart played his heart out. 48 minutes.
He almost had a triple double.
Almost had
24, 13, and 8.
Yep. Almost had a triple double. Three steals. He had five turnovers, but we're not going to talk too much about that. He was a plus 24, but he was a plus 4 for the game. Plus 12 for JB. Great game from everybody except for Deuce McBride.
I mean, you don't even got to check Josh Hart's plus minus because he played 48 minutes. Oh, you got to just look at the final score.
True. Everybody played a good game except for Deuce McBride. The bench unit for the New York Knicks, only one person scored off of the bench. That was Mitchell Robinson, who only played 11 minutes and 47 seconds. Yeah. He was the only bench player for the Knicks to score. Meanwhile, the Pacers bench unit just, man.
Didn't make a difference, though.
It did not make a difference, but, you know, you figure maybe Tyrese Halliburton scores more than 6 points for the game. Perhaps the Pacers take this one home. But you got to shout out everybody. Dante DiVincenzo, OG Anunoby's defense was clutch, and he scored 13 points. Isaiah Hartenstein, 13 points. Dante DiVincenzo, 25. Just amazing output from everybody. 43 points for Jalen Brunson. I don't think I mentioned it. I said he had 40-plus, but he scored 43 in this game.
Had six assists.
Six
rebounds.
One block. Jalen Brunson was doing it all. Do you have any thoughts and notes? I said I was going to get through this quick, but I obviously lied.
Yeah, you lied.
Yes.
This game was pretty entertaining to watch. It gave a good, set the tone. I feel like the Knicks definitely set the tone in this game one. It seemed like they played a little bit too much to Indiana's pace, but somehow it still felt like the Knicks were in control of the pace the entire game. Mm-hmm. I don't think that makes sense, but if you were watching the game, you pretty much understand, like, the Knicks were playing a little more fast-paced, but as long as they're keeping the game within several possessions of 5-point lead, 6-point lead, even if Indiana goes up 10 points, you are confident that Knicks are going to get some stops, keep the score relatively close until the fourth quarter. Indiana hasn't really seen a lot of clutch moments because they're such a high scoring team, fast pace. Mm-hmm. They're used to just blowing teams out and or just getting blown out. They're not really in many tight-knit, close games where they're forced to see, like, who can they depend on. And you never really see big moments for Indiana and those types of situations. So anytime it's a close game like this, I always feel like the Knicks are the favored team in those types of instances. So I feel like this game one definitely set the tone. And if every game goes to this pace, I can see that it won't be a long series. But
so you called a sweep last week.
Yeah.
After game one, how were you feeling about the potential sweep?
I was thinking
before anything that came after it.
I was thinking that I wanted to see more bench players
step up.
And I wanted to see just more guys playing. Like, if we're going to have Mitchell Robinson and Deuce McBride being the only two guys off the bench, mm-hmm. I didn't think that was going to be a recipe for success. Unless it's just going to be a blowout, which is obviously not going to be with Indiana. Mitchell Robinson actually went down, I believe, at some point in this game. And that's why Precious Achiuwa played those 4 minutes.
Yes.
But he came back. Yeah, he came back, but he's after this game was over, it was announced that he's pretty much done for at least 6 weeks, which is pretty much the rest of the postseason.
Yep.
So
unless we make it to the finals.
Yeah, unless we make it to the finals.
But
which is a possibility.
They said reevaluated, so that means it's probably not gonna happen, even if the Knicks made the finals.
Right. So yeah, I was pretty much confident, even though we lost Mitch. What were your thoughts?
My thoughts were, I'm scared. Not that I'm scared that we're going to lose the series, but...
You're scared for the rest of the postseason?
Sort of, because Knicks were already depleted. They already were missing Julius Randle and missing Bojan Bogdanović. Mm-hmm. We end up playing basically two guys, you know. If we don't count those 4 minutes of Pascal Siakam, it's looking like you would only have seen Mitchell Robinson and Deuce McBride coming off the bench for this game. Mm-hmm. And the Knicks squeaked one out. You know, that was a little concerning to me. Like, if they were able to play seven guys and then, like, all right, nah, there was no chance that you were going to win this, then I'd have been fine. But, Just seeing, like, you're going to have to play just as hard as you did against the Philadelphia 76ers to put away this Pacers team, which they will do, in my opinion. But that's not something that you want to do going into the Eastern Conference Finals. So I was a little disheartened. I was like, yeah, we're definitely, if we keep going this way, we're definitely going to lose at least one game. Hopefully we don't lose anybody so that maybe it's just one game as opposed to a potential six or seven. And then after I said that, it was announced that Mitchell Robinson was going to be gone. And I was like, oh, but it wasn't a, oh, we're going to definitely lose more than one game. It was a, man, I would like to have that body.
Well, you know? I was thinking for this series, it might be beneficial for the Knicks for him not to play because he's not going to be able to keep up with a fast tempo like Indiana would be able to. And I feel like Precious fits that seamlessly.
I think, well, I wouldn't say seamlessly.
Why not?
Precious comes...
He's faster.
Precious is faster. Speed isn't everything. I think Mitchell Robinson's a better defensive player, even if as long as we were in the half court set, which the Knicks can make it a half court set if they rebound the ball properly, which Mitchell Robinson is the best, you know, player on the team for the rebounding purposes.
And shot blocking.
I don't know if he's the best shot blocker, but he is the best. He is the most likely to make someone uncomfortable with his height, with his heft, with how long his arms are. He has learned that he doesn't need to foul, and he doesn't need to block the shot to make it a good defensive possession. And missing that, okay, yeah, maybe Precious is a little faster on the possessions where the possessions are not that fast. I would rather have Mitchell Robinson out there. He can cover ground without having to run super fast.
But how many possessions would that be with Indiana is what I'm saying. Like, Precious is able to guard up on the pick and roll. I don't think Mitch is able to guard
all of Indiana's
guards on the pick and roll.
All of Indiana's best possessions so far, and at least in game one, which we'll go into the next few games, which I will hint, hint, it continues. All of their best possessions were in the half court set. It was in the half court set, and occasionally it was off of steals. I understand your point. I do think it's a good point. I don't think that Precious is better for the series than Mitchell Robinson. I think Mitchell Robinson's ability to rebound the basketball is very important against this Indiana Pacers team. I think that the key to beating this Indiana Pacers team, and I've always felt like this, is rebounding the basketball. If you can get offensive rebounds, they can't run off of misses. If you get defensive rebounds, they can't kill you with a second chance point. And those are the two main ways that Indiana likes to score. That's it for my thoughts. Well, let's move on to game two.
So game two at Madison Square Garden, Knicks got a 1-0 lead. And I came into this game thinking that they were going to just jump on Indiana's back, mm-hmm. try to just set the tone again, let them know that there's not really much of a...
It's not as close as they want it to make.
Yeah, it's not really a contest because the Sixers showed they had more talent than the Knicks, and they just didn't have like the toughness and the grit to match the intensity that the Knicks play with. And in this series, it's even more so that because this is Indiana's first time in the playoffs in a few years. This is Tyrese Halliburton's first playoffs. Pascal Siakam is the most seasoned playoff player on their team, and he's never led a team in the playoffs. He's always been like second, third option. Mm-hmm. So you never really needed to depend on Pascal like he's being depended on now. And after the first game performance with Tyrese only scoring 6 points, Pascal being their best player, and he wasn't even that... Now, I don't want to say impressive, but he wasn't outstanding. Like, he's not one of the top players in the playoffs. Like, you would name at least 10 guys before you would think of Pascal Siakam. So, in this game...
He played very well in a couple of those games in the first round, though. Give him his respect.
Against who, though?
Right.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, in this game, I'm thinking Jalen Brunson, he just dropped a 40-piece. I'm thinking that nobody on Indiana can really guard him. Andrew Nembhard has been... struggling to match up with him just due to size. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if they're the same height, but Brunson definitely got at least a good 15 pounds on him, at least. And he's able to just shoot clearly over him, over TJ McConnell. Even dude from Indiana who's I can't. He was on the Boston Celtics. They drafted him, Nesmith. Mm-hmm. Even though he's one of their best defenders, he has strength that can match up better with Brunson. He's longer than the other two guys, but Brunson's footwork is too much for him to keep up with because.
You were thinking all of this going into game two?
Yeah. Because I'm like, if you can't stop Jalen Brunson, what can they do? Right. And there's nobody on their team that you really have to like center your entire defense around like we had to with Embiid and Tyrese Maxey.
Okay.
Halliburton's a great player, but he's not a superstar. So if you can get 40 from Brunson or at least an efficient performance from Brunson, you can rely on the Villanova guys.
I think you're doing a disservice to Tyrese Halliburton. Tyrese Halliburton played in game one very passively, mm-hmm. and he's been very passive mm-hmm. Coming into the playoffs. Most of that is because of injury woes.
Mm-hmm.
And
Hamstring injury.
He has some back issues. Tyrese Halliburton, when playing at his peak, is a superstar.
I'm not going that far. He's a really talented player. He's an all-star player.
Look at his stats before he got hurt.
I saw him play. I saw the in-season tournament. He's a really good player. I'm not calling him a superstar, though, because you have to be able to lead your team to a conference finals or finals, I feel like, in order to be a superstar. And I don't feel like he's that caliber of player. I feel like he's a talented player. He's always either I'm going to score a lot or I'm going to pass a lot. He never combines those two things. Jalen Brunson's a superstar. Nobody on Indiana can stop him. You can stop Tyrese Halliburton from doing one of the main two things that he always does.
I feel like we're going to go back to this later. Go ahead.
We might. Because he like you just said, he is capable of having superstar performances like he did in game two. You cutting me off. Don't rush me now. So
a lot of preamble here.
Jalen Brunson in the first half of this game.
Yep.
He leaves early with a foot injury. You couldn't really see what happened. There wasn't really like a play where he went down. Mm-hmm. And he missed the entire second quarter. During this time period, OG Anunoby is our main offensive threat. He's the main scoring option during this time, and he's going crazy. He's providing an efficient half and keeping the game relatively close, even though we don't have Brunson and I watched the games on mute, so I didn't really know, especially because it's on TNT.
Mm-hmm. That he was out?
I didn't know Brunson was out. I'm like, it's been 4 minutes. Like, he played all of the last few games for Philly. Mm-hmm. He played how many minutes in game one, and now he's out for 4 or 5 minutes? I'm like, damn, he's going to come back well-rested. And then I see that he actually out with an injury. He didn't play the entire second quarter.
Right.
My heart racing. The energy in the building looked like it was dying down. Mm-hmm. Pacers looked like they was playing with some intensity.
Definitely.
And there were reports during halftime that like Jalen Brunson received just like a huge ovation coming out of the tunnel, kind of similar to like Willis Reed. Because during halftime, players come out to shoot around if they're going to play in the second half. And once the crowd saw that he came out,
The
players were saying that they heard the crowd from the locker room.
Right.
And I could just imagine how much energy that provides you coming out into that third quarter. And in that third quarter, Jalen Brunson, he comes out, he starts the half, and the Pacers didn't seem like they were ready to match the energy that the Knicks came out with in that third quarter. And they just ran it up on him in that third quarter. Do you have what the run was? I wasn't able to get it before we able to record, but they went on a crazy run. And in the fourth quarter, it basically just continued on that same way. The Indiana tried to make a run, but the Knicks basically just pulled this game out. They won this game 130-121. Multiple players finished with at least 28 points. OG Anunoby had 28 points before he went down with a hamstring injury on a fast break. That would have gave him 30 points. But he ended up missing the rest of the game after the third quarter, and the Knicks still pulled this one out. Gritty win, very impressive win, I felt like. in this game, our main scoring options were still Jalen Brunson, even though he didn't play it in the second quarter. And halfway through the first, he finished the game with 26 points, 6 assists, hit some clutch shots down the stretch at 3 in Andrew Nembhard's face. Dante DiVincenzo had 35. Oh, no, I'm looking at game 3, my fault. But Dante hit that clutch 3 in game 1, came out in this game.
Fired away,
hit 6 threes. He had 28 points. Like I said, OG had 28 points. 10 for 19 from the field, hit 4 threes. Our bench, it was only Miles McBride and Precious Achiuwa, but we got to see 40 seconds from big name Burks. I got to give him a nickname because he's starting to get some playoff burn this time around. So we're going to see him a lot going forward now that Mitchell Robinson is out and Boyan's out. So now it's looking like we're going to have to count on Burks, even though he only played 1 minute this game. What was your main takeaways when you saw how this game went?
OG Anunoby came out amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't think he really touched on how much he scored in the first half, especially after Jalen Brunson went down. Everything. I mean, you did touch on it, but OG Anunoby really
took over.
It didn't take over because the Knicks were still down.
He took over for the Knicks.
But as far as the Knicks were looking for something to, some semblance of offense, somebody that they could go to, mm-hmm. and do something, outside of, surprise Dante DiVincenzo threes. And OG Anunoby just did it all. He scored from three. He scored layups. He dunked. He stole the ball. He did it all in those first three quarters. And then that layup that he tried to attempt and pulled
his hammy.
Yeah, in the third quarter. It's just like, please don't let it be something super serious that leaves him out for the whole season. We already down Mitch. We're already down Julius.
We down Boyan.
We're down Mitch. Please. And, he got back up. He did walk off the court, but they reported it was done for the game. And I was like, man, I hope we can pull this one out. I really hope we do. And the Knicks did. They were able to pull it out. Funnily enough, Rick Carlisle of the Indiana Pacers, is their head coach, got tossed from this game and was really irate because they called a foul correctly.
Because they were overturned a call with no challenge. That's what it really came down to, because they were still salty about that kickball in game 1. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the biggest difference was the referee saw the play in the second game and told the other ref that the play was wrong. In the first game, they didn't see that it wasn't a kickball.
And the Pacers,
they would have had to review it.
And the Pacers after the game were like, oh, if they can overturn and review this call, why couldn't they do that in game 1? Because nobody saw it in real time, and they weren't going to stop the game to make sure that it was not a kickball. They're not going to do that. But if multiple refs have the same angle, and one of them sees something differently, which was the Isaiah Hartenstein. Was it the Isaiah Hartenstein double dribble that they overturned? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The dude's dribbling with one hand the entire time. Now, if everybody's looking at the same guy and they can see he didn't double, two of them see that he didn't double dribble, they can overturn that call. If nobody sees it, they won't. They won't look at it, nothing.
Right.
They didn't look at it. They didn't look in the camera. They didn't at the video. They had a disagreement. Disagreements caused overturns. Then afterward, Rick Carlisle was like, "Oh, they're getting such an advantage. Small market teams, they should be treated just as well as big market teams." And it's like, bro, y'all lost because y'all not. You weren't as good as the Knicks in this game. If you wanted to cry, game 1, understandable, right? You want to cry about, because that was a closer game than this one. This game, you were going to lose, even if you don't overturn that. Even if you keep it as a double dribble, the Knicks were going to win that game because they out-hustled you, they out-rebounded you. And that was the story.
And they could have still won game 1 after that kickball too. Like,
right.
They just they relying could have turned, on these
took
referees
it into overtime. To... If they don't make stupid decisions at the end of the game, they have a legitimate opportunity to send it into overtime, and they did it. So outside of the whole thing with OG and me just wondering what are the Knicks going to do for game three?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of crying from Rick Carlisle and Pacers fans, which is seems to be a theme in these playoffs when it comes to the New York Knicks, who has not seen this level of success since the 90s, that they've had the same amount of success that they've seen in the past 2 years. You know, if you want to go 4 years, sure. You know, there was a bad season in there. They weren't rigging things for the Knicks when there was a bad season for the Knicks. It didn't benefit the Knicks in any way to where they could get the best player in the league. It didn't benefit the Knicks in that, the Knicks had to create this situation. They had to make the moves, the free agent signings, the trades. They had to do everything, and there was no unfair advantage in any of that. Now you want to say that the league is telling the refs to call for the major markets when outside of the Boston Celtics, what major market is still in the playoffs? Like,
anyway. It's always just something to complain about. But before we even move on to this next game, there's something else that happened.
What's that?
That's worth talking about. Because remember, we were talking about Reggie Miller earlier in the podcast.
They flew him out. For this game.
Yeah, he was calling this game for TNT.
Which had probably a good big reason why you had it on mute.
And for sure. And before the game, he was talking about how he owns the building. He has no reason to be scared to come to this building. He was just talking real crazy in the pregame. So in the fourth quarter, when the Knicks had this game pretty much put away, the crowd started chanting, "Fuck Reggie Miller."
And Josh Hart
comes over and said, "Hey, Reggie, I don't know if you heard that, but I think the crowd is saying, fuck you," on live television.
Caught on the mic.
Into the mic. So that was one of the aspects of the game that I'm going to remember the most, because I saw like Josh Hart thinking about it before he did it in the replay.
Yeah.
He was looking over at Reggie. He started smiling, and then he walked over and said that. And the camera caught him while he was doing it. It was just one of the best moments of the playoffs so far to me.
That man is a national treasure.
Yeah, he's going to get a statue.
Oh, yeah. Came into the season not knowing how to feel about Josh Hart. Was able to meet Josh Hart a little bit at the Rucker Park. Got him to sign something for me. If I ever get an opportunity like that again, I'm definitely going to try and chop it up with him. Game 3 happened last night, May 10th. Mm-hmm. At Gainbridge Fieldhouse in Indiana. Knicks are missing OG Anunoby, Mitchell Robinson, Julius Randle, Bojan Bogdanovic, John Starks, Patrick Ewing, everybody. Latrell Sprewell, they're missing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They got four players in a five-man rotation. Come out, and they play the first half pretty much like the team that they are. Very depleted, missing guys. Not sure. A starting lineup that they haven't played all year. They haven't played all playoffs. It's the first time that they've played a playoff game without OG Anunoby.
Mm-hmm. Precious had to step into that lineup.
Precious had to step in, and the Knicks didn't. Roll. It wasn't a seamless transition. But Alec Burks comes in, mm-hmm. gives them good minutes in the second quarter. Second half, the New York Knicks roar back from an 11-point deficit behind Jalen Brunson and Dante DiVincenzo going on a little hot streak. Come back on rebounding, come back on defense. And Alec Burks, shout out for the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a good second half as far as offense. But he got it done defensively too. Stole the ball, had a steal during a crucial moment in the game, and got a block.
Still feel like it was a wash?
Yes. Yes, it was. Let's just get to the fourth quarter. 3 minutes, 15 seconds left in the game. Pacers challenge a foul that was called on Jalen Brunson, which was overturned and called for a jump ball. Now, I watched this in real time. I was like, okay, there was a foul before they called the whistle. You could say it's a late call, but it was a foul. And they decided, no, we're going to just talk about when the whistle was called, which there wasn't a foul, really. It was some marginal contact, quote unquote. But I was like, okay, the ball ends up going out of bounds off of one of the Pacers, so it should still be Knicks' ball. Well, apparently that's not how the rule works. If nobody gains possession, they call it a jump ball.
Mm-hmm.
They do the jump ball. Jump ball goes into way into Pacers territory. The Knicks get it anyway and can't score. Deuce McBride gets a wide open 3-point shot, misses. All right. That was an opportunity to go up. Defensive stop, and Josh Hart gets a foul. Hart misses one. They were down one before this. Now it's 102-102. I wish Josh Hart would have made both of those free throws. I was really cursing at him when he missed one. Another defensive stop by the New York Knicks. Defensively, they're great. But there was a Turner block that I felt could have been called a goaltend, but it was bang-bang play. I'm not mad that they didn't call it, right? That led to a layup by that. Did you see this? When Pascal Siakam basically put Isaiah Hartenstein in a full Nelson headlock to get so that he couldn't defend the shot.
Mm-hmm.
So that should have been called a foul, but whatever. Okay, it's 104-102. It should be 104-103 if Josh Hart sinks that, or it could be 104-104. If Deuce hits his three, right? Brunson gets hit with a foul. Brunson misses a free throw. Now, add it up. Knicks could either have 104 or they could have 103. He misses one. So it could have been 104-103. Now it could be 104-105 to 104. Defensive stop, but Brunson smokes the layup. If he makes that, the Knicks could be up 105-104. Again, that's what, four points now that the Knicks have missed on offense that they should have gotten. Siakam layup that Dante DiVincenzo touches when it's coming off of the rim. It's called goaltending. It's 106-103. At this point, the Knicks could have been up, right?
That was a bad goaltending call, too.
I don't know if it was a bad goaltending call, but...
It wasn't.
It was still coming off of the rim.
It never touched the rim. And it wasn't going to touch the rim.
It was like still hanging over the rim is what I mean. It was. It was partially over the rim.
It hit the backboard, and that's why they called it. But it was going to go, like, the rim is right here. It hit the backboard here, and it was going straight this way. It wasn't even going to touch the rim, and he smacked it, and they called it goaltend.
I'm gonna look at it. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. Maybe we won't.
We're going to forget about it next week.
Or maybe I'll do a little short IG story or something on it. But when I saw the replay that they showed, I was like, okay, I guess it's goaltending. Either way, Dante DiVincenzo should have let it come off the rim a little bit more and grabbed a rebound.
I think that was Hartenstein.
It could have been.
Yeah.
I think when I looked at it, they did call it on Dante DiVincenzo. I'll look at it right now. But again, you missed two free throws.
Mm-hmm.
You had a wide open three. That's 5 points that you had opportunity to take control.
Mm-hmm.
5 points that you didn't get. And okay, you get that goaltending. Another defensive stop. You don't get the defensive stop. Now it's Knicks ball. Jalen Brunson hits a clutch step back three to tie it at 106. And now it's up to defense, right? Now it's up to the Knicks to make a stop. They do very well defensively on the other end.
Got the ball out of Tyrese's
hands. Got it out of Tyrese's hands. Now you got it in Nembhard's hands with 3 seconds left. He's got to chuck up a prayer. He does. It seems like he wasn't aware of how much time was left on the shot clock. He's like, oh, snap. I got to put this up. He has missed damn near all his shots up until this point. He throws up a prayer. Yeah, I think that might have been his only three of the game.
Yeah.
Throws up a prayer and it goes right in.
He had 2 points before this point.
Pacers go up 109-106. And then now it's like, okay, you're down three. Now you're thinking Pacers are going to have to foul so that the Knicks don't shoot a three. But they play their defense on that play was very good. You got to give credit to them. Their defense was very good. They surrounded Brunson without really fouling him until they do. I believe Nembhard is the one who smacks Jalen Brunson on the arm. Jalen Brunson feels it, and then he awkwardly throws up a shot.
That wasn't going to be an N1 anyway.
Right. It wouldn't have been N1. They would have called the shot, you know, before the act of shooting. It would have been two free throws if they call it. You have to throw up a better shot attempt than that. You know, if they block it, whatever. But what he threw up, there was no possibility it was going to go in. No Knicks were in the vicinity of the rim to grab a rebound.
And we had no timeouts.
We had no timeouts. The Pacers do what they have to do, grab the rebound, they hit their free throws. Knicks lose 111-106 for a series lead of 2-1. After the game, I looked back through it. Miles Turner entered the fourth quarter with three offensive rebounds. He finished the game with six. He had some of the most backbreaking offensive rebounds in that quarter against the New York Knicks. I thought Dante DiVincenzo, who had the same amount of shot attempts as Jalen Brunson, I thought that he deserved to get more shot attempts up. I understand Jalen Brunson's our guy, but you have to understand that with him being our guy and being hurt, and he looked hurt, like his shots were short, his shots were not going in. Yeah, he had that clutch three, but I thought Dante DiVincenzo should have had more looks going down the stretch than Jalen Brunson did. He was more efficient. Jalen Brunson had... he wasn't efficient in the first half, and he was less efficient in the second half. He was turning over the ball. It was a 5-turnover game for Brunson. And the last thought I thought was, you know, Deuce McBride, who I was really like hyping up. I said last week, I thought that maybe I was starting to think maybe he should start over Dante DiVincenzo. And this entire series has made me look very foolish for saying that, because not that he's been bad, but the games that he, like that game one he had in Philly, mm-hmm. we haven't seen that Miles McBride. The shooting hasn't been there for the most part. He was 2-for-5 in this game, which isn't terrible.
From three.
But that last three that Deuce McBride changes the entire game, how I view his entire game from yesterday. Mm-hmm. If he makes that from three, excuse me. He was 3-for-8 from the field, which is terrible. But, you know, he hits that three, he's 4-for-8. He's 3-for-5 from three. It's a good game all of a sudden. It was during a clutch moment in the game where he was wide open. The Knicks probably win if he hits that three.
I feel like offensively, maybe he didn't score as efficiently in that last shot. It definitely would have helped us win this game, but he had a great game to me, in my opinion.
I wouldn't say great, but go ahead. I didn't think it was bad.
I'm saying he had a great game because he had the highest plus minus on the team. He was guarding.
Yes, he did.
TJ McConnell, who's been giving us issues the entire series, and TJ McConnell finished 3-for-10. He didn't hit a single three again.
Yep.
Right. He hit like one mid-range shot. He was also matched up with the other guy off the bench, Shepherd, who's been knocking down threes all postseason long at an incredible efficiency rate. This game, he only finished 1-for-5, finished with 2 points. And he also had some minutes against the starting guards as well. And I just felt like we don't look for Deuce to be a guy that you give the ball to in the clutch. You expect him to just knock down open threes throughout the game. And hopefully some in the fourth quarter, he's knocked down some really huge shots this year so far in the clutch. He hit a clutch three against Cleveland. When we didn't have Brunson that one time, he played the whole 48-minute game. When Brunson went down against Cleveland, he had that game against Philly in Philly against Embiid when we won by like 40 points. But you're not going to see him going off multiple games in a row from multiple three-pointers and getting a bunch of opportunity, especially when Jalen Brunson's scoring, I mean, playing as many minutes as he is. So I can understand why he's not going to be a main offensive option, but as long as he's steady on the defensive end and he's still able to alleviate the pressure while Brunson's off the court, getting the ball moving, helping get stops on the defensive end, I feel like he's really important in the role that he plays. So I would like to see him just score a little more efficiently. That's the only complaint that I would have about his game.
Everything you're saying is 100% true. And the last thing you said was especially true. He is important. He is too important, right? We made this trade for Alec Burks and Deuce McBride. Mm. And we made this trade so that we had a little bit more oomph when it came to not Jalen Brunson. And Boyan's out. Alec Burks, it was a good Alec Burks game.
It was good. He had a great game. He provided the biggest points off the bench.
How much did he score in the second half?
It don't matter. He had the most points on the bench in the second half.
How much? Tell me.
I don't know.
I'm asking a question. He had 0 points in the second half.
All right.
Excuse me. He had one point. It was a free throw.
The points that he did have were the biggest points that we needed. And it was like he scored the most points off the bench.
And he went
4 for 6, 2 for 4 from three. And then nobody else off the bench helped outside of Deuce. I mean, not nobody else, but Jericho didn't score.
Right.
Like,
yeah, because we're expecting Jericho Sims to score. Listen, man.
We expected Burks to score, and he scored.
If we're going to call a spade a spade, we're going to call a spade a spade, right? We're not looking for one-half performances from these guys that we acquired, right? We're expecting them to help us win a game.
And he did contribute and help us with winning this game.
We didn't win this game, so he didn't.
I'm saying, if we would have won this game, we would have been looking back and saying, the minutes that we got from Alec Burks definitely
like
helped us win this game.
What do you like to say about ifs, sir?
He's not in the game in the last four minutes.
Don't do it. Because every time I say if, you always tell me, well, if ifs was a spliff, and if all the if euphemisms in the world, you got me, right? And now, if we would have won this game, I don't want to hear it.
I'm saying
I don't want to hear it.
If we would have won a game,
you're 100% right.
Exactly.
Excuse me, sir. You started this argument by saying it was a great Alec Burks game. And I said it was a good one, right? Which is why I said we need to have a discourse on what is great. Because your definition of great and my definition of great is two different things. You cannot have a great game when your main contribution is scoring, and in a whole half of the game in which you played 9 minutes and 21 seconds, you missed two of your shots and you missed one of your free throws. If you would have hit both your free throws, then you might even have an argument. But he couldn't even do that. What's your question?
How many points did the Indiana bench score?
It doesn't matter.
Yes, it does matter.
All right. In the second half?
No, in the entire game.
I'm going to say it was something more than six because they scored 6 points.
14 points.
Okay.
Alec Burks scored 14 points.
Okay.
So if we won this game, we're going to look back and say Alec Burks is one of the biggest reasons we won this game.
We could also say that the Pacers bench stepped up in the second half because in the second half they scored 6 points. And in the second half, the only person to score was Deuce McBride. And he only scored on one field goal. So, you know, we can play semantics with this all day, right? The second half is the most important half.
Okay.
Right? You can say if you win, that play during the first half was key and it was a great game. We won't win this game without Alec Burks. We lost.
But in the second half, we had a 9-point lead in the fourth quarter.
We lost. So you cannot call it a great game because he had opportunities to make his footprint in the second half and he could not. And he was a -7 in the second half also. He had the worst plus minus in the second half of the game.
After not playing for months.
You said Tyrese Halliburton is not a superstar. Mm-hmm. And he scored
the same amount of points as Dante DiVincenzo.
35 points for a Pacers win. Tyrese Halliburton is a superstar guy. I'm sorry to tell you. If he can play like this every game, which I don't expect he will because he's hurt, but if he can play like this, he is a superstar. He is definitely capable. He's one round away from making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, which is your prerequisite. Mm-hmm. If the Knicks can't figure out this whole health rotation thing, they will make it to the conference finals. Do I think that's going to happen? No. Do I think it's impossible for the Pacers to beat the Knicks when they're down all these guys and Jalen Brunson is running around on one foot, hobbling around? He can't hit shots because it's not impossible, bro.
I'm saying he's not a superstar if he gets his team to the conference finals after beating Milwaukee, who had nobody, and then the Knicks, who lost half their starters.
He is doing what he
and
has.
He scored 35 points, and so did Dante DiVincenzo. So I'm not saying he's a superstar for that.
Okay. What did he have in the game before?
How much did he have in the game before? You tell me.
He scored more than 20 plus points.
So did Dante.
Right? It's just that they didn't win. They didn't win that game. But if you if we're gonna,
it's more than just points to be a superstar.
Yeah, it's passing too, and he has one of the highest assist rates in the entire league, both in the playoffs and in the regular season. Listen, man, I'm not. All I'm saying is, you can't say he's not a superstar because of how he's playing when he's hurt. Like when he was healthy, that boy was an all-star.
He
got more votes than Jalen Brunson, deservedly so, because of how good he was playing. He was shooting well. He was scoring well. He was passing well. He was leading the Pacers to the top offensive as the top offensive team in the entire NBA before he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only reason why Boston is over number one because of Halley's injury.
You can't ignore.
No, Boston's number one because they're a great offense. Indiana's offense was historically good at the time and number one at the time. Then he got hurt. And Boston kept doing what they were doing because they didn't have to deal with that kind of injury.
Everybody's hurt right now. I don't want to hear about hurt. Well, Embiid was hurt and dropped 50 in the first round. Brunson's hurt, dropped 40 in game one.
I'm not talking about the playoffs. I'm just talking about what a healthy Halliburton looks like. A healthy Halliburton looks like a superstar.
If you want to court you healthy.
Point blank, period. If you want to point to games where he was healthy and he, okay, you do that. But don't be like, oh, he's not a superstar because blah, blah, blah. He's not playing great. Embiid wasn't playing great either when he was hurt. And he's playing hurt still, and he's putting up 30-plus and 20-plus points.
Embiid was still playing like a superstar. I've said, if you on the court, you're healthy,
and
especially during the playoffs.
And Halliburton is playing like one, too. All right, let's close it out with the upcoming games. Starting off with game
4 at Indiana's arena, Gainbridge Fieldhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the Knicks are going to take this one. Indiana was playing a little desperate in the first half, but it's going to take another Hail Mary shot, another huge desperation game from Tyrese Halliburton, because he seemed like he was just not trying to go down 3-0. Like he was playing like he was desperate. I didn't see that same desperation from his teammates. And that's the biggest reason why I think they're going to lose this next game at home. It's an early game, 3:30,
mm-hmm.
after they just played last night. And I don't know if they're conditioned to play games like this back-to-back. I know the Knicks are definitely conditioned to do it because that's all they've done all year long. It's only been a few blowouts all year. Most of the games for the Knicks have been down to the wire, just like how this whole series has been. That's what gives me the most confidence moving forward. I think... the experience that's on the Knicks side, I think the fact that they're not afraid of the moment, the fact that they're a better road team than they are a home team historically, I think they should have won game 3. They know that they should have won game 3.
I agree.
And they're going to come out and try to just put their foot on their neck early. And early game, I think they're going to definitely just win this game so that they can finish the series out Tuesday night at home.
Until I saw this video coming in to record today, I was like, I don't know if the Knicks can do it. And then I saw the post game. I didn't even see the whole press conference. I just seen how Halliburton exited the press conference. Did you see that video?
Mm-mm.
Halliburton went to the...
We didn't even mention his injury.
Well, he got back spasms.
No. He hurt his ankle on that fast break against Josh Hart.
Yeah, but I don't...
He rolled his ankle. He couldn't even walk.
He did. Well, I don't know if that was why he was... Maybe that was why.
Yeah, but ever since that play, he was, like, walking gingerly.
He was walking off of that, away from that press conference, and he had to go down some steps, and they had some railings to get down the steps, and he was... You know how like elderly people, how they like grab both and they ease on down because mm-hmm. their backs are. That's how Halliburton was looking when he was going down those steps. And it looked like, I don't know if it was the foot. Maybe it was the foot. Maybe it was the back spasms. Maybe it was both. Maybe it was the. If he's looking like that coming into game 4 tomorrow.
early 3:30 start.
And TJ McConnell has another game like he did in game three. He was lit us up in games one and two. Like you said, Deuce McBride did his job against TJ McConnell in game three. And if JB, like he doesn't have to have an all-time game, but if he plays like he did in game three with a couple less mistakes, the Knicks are taking game four easy.
Yep.
Game five, Madison Square Garden, May 14th, 8 p.m. Knicks are going to play the Pacers. And, man, it's hard for me to say that they're going to close it out if they win game four. Wow. They're going to close it out in game five. Why is it hard for me to say that? It's hard for me to say that because just of how depleted the Knicks are. And I think that game three really should have been the game that they took. It's going to be hard for them to take two straight games with the guys that they have on the court. Deuce McBride, I want to see another good Deuce McBride game like he had in game one against the Sixers. Dante DiVincenzo, he's going to score 20-plus points. We already know that. We got no OG. Besides those two guys, besides Deuce, besides DDV, Josh Hart has to step up as he has all playoffs.
Yeah, he's been our most consistent player, I feel like.
The longer he does it, the more I feel like he's due for a bad game. And
why?
I don't like to feel like that, but just from what he's shown us consistently, these are things, even throughout this season, he'll get the rebounds, get the assists, get the points, da-da-da. He's due for a game where he's just not himself.
Why?
And hopefully, we don't see that in the playoffs. But the longer he goes with it, the more I'm like, damn, he's due for a bad game at some point. He's due for one of those games where it's just like, listen, it is what it is. You have to deal with that from Josh Hart.
When's the last time we've had a game like that from Josh Hart, though?
In the regular season. We've had a few of them.
Like, I can't remember the last one.
Playoffs is a shorter thing. So, you know, the fact that he's been consistent through the playoffs is good. But we've seen it. We've seen it in the regular season. We saw it in the regular season last year. We saw it in the playoffs last year.
I remember seeing it to start the season, but I feel like Josh Hart is just playing how Josh Hart plays. Yeah. And the fact that he's just playing more minutes is just...
I'm going to call it for the Knicks, but, you know, I'm just making all of my fears known.
Okay.
I fear a bad Josh Hart game at some point in the playoffs, and I just hope it's not game five. Jalen Brunson didn't look good in game three. I think the Knicks can win it if he looks the same way in game four. I don't think they can do it two straight games if he's looking that bad. So hopefully he heals up.
The Knicks is here for the moment, I feel like. You're
calling the closeout?
Yeah, like the stuff that we saw in the regular season from guys having performances that just aren't good, I don't see that happening in the playoffs because every game just means so much. We haven't been shortchanged on effort since the playoffs have started by any of the players. I think they've been treating every single game like a closeout. Mm-hmm. And as long as they continue to play like that, it's hard for me to pick against them, against any team. So
I hear you.
They were supposed to win that last game. It came down to a Hail Mary, and then they had to play the foul game after that. I don't think they're going to play with their food in game four or game five.
Well, to be fair, in that last game, yes, it did come to a Hail Mary. Even if they missed it and they start playing the foul game, the Knicks were missing free throws. I didn't trust them to win that game.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I pointed to all the other plays that the Knicks, there were more plays that the Knicks did not capitalize on than there were bad foul calls and missed calls and things that should have gone their way that didn't. There were more things that the Knicks could have done to execute, being wide open and missing shots, missing layups, missing free throws. Those were bigger contributors to the loss. And, you know, if you talk about the foul game at the end of the game, Brunson missed one, Josh Hart missed, like... the Pacers still likely would have won the game if we're just talking about foul shots instead of a prayer three.
If those are the two guys that we got to look back at and be like, oh, that's the reason we lost, I'm sure that they're looking at it like that.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
And they're going to come out laser focused for the next two games just to close the series out because they already got the two wins. And even though they're depleted, they know that they need the time to rest before this next series. So they're going to come out guns blazing.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to say before we get up out of here, I never gave you credit.
You never do.
Completely off the Knicks. The Timberwolves are like my second favorite team right now.
Well, hey, I tried to tell you several times, actually. And I didn't, you don't have to, you don't have to give me credit. I was just, I was looking at it and I was like, I'm hearing things.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that I'm seeing from them appears to be true. Mm-hmm. And I don't see how that's going to fall off. They have guys on the team that have playoff experience. And they have guys who are coming up who are going to be superstars. And they got the defensive. They got the big man, which the past few years in the playoffs and the finals, that you need the big man who can do things offensively. As well as you need the guy who can do things defensively. And they got the big guy who can do things defensively. They got the big guy who can do things offensively. They got the wing who can do things defensively and guard multiple positions. And they got the superstar who, that's four things that check the list.
Yeah.
And I said, if they're playing good defensively and they're winning games and they in line for that top three seed, listen, they're a title contender to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an old analysis.
I shortchanged them early in the year just because I didn't think. They would stay healthy. I thought Mike Conley wasn't going to be healthy. I feel like he was like the biggest component to their team. But now it looks like they might come out the West. They swept.
Is he the biggest component to their team? I would say Anthony Edwards.
Well, he's the best player for sure. But I'm talking about, I feel like to be an elite team, to be a championship level team, you need that point guard who's going to be able to set the table for everybody.
Yes, this is true.
A superstar like Anthony Edwards is.
I think the other four things I mentioned though were the more important. Like
that's not true because Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and all of them are on the team together, and they got swept. They got superstars on their team.
Who is the defensive wing on that team? Who's the offensive big man that is like top three offensive big man?
What about Philly?
Who's the top three defensive big man on that team?
What about Philly?
Philly had a hurt Joel Embiid.
And they didn't
have the wing who can guard multiple positions. They
Kelly
had,
Oubre.
No. We're talking Jaden McDaniels and OG Anunoby. Kelly Oubre is not anywhere in that hemisphere, sir.
Oh yeah, he's not anyway, like them.
No, that's what I'm talking about though. If you have a guy like that, you need a guy like that. Anyway, game 6 May 17th if necessary. Let's sign out, French.
We'd like to bid you adieu. Thank you. Damn, why I keep hitting the mic? Should I just say it over? Nah, right? We'd like to thank you for listening to the Knicks Take Podcast. Peace out, y'all.
Blessings keep on falling through.